You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yep, troll on in for the first real time in the new show in the new year. You know, the last couple of shows we did some recaps and some best of kind of things, but right now we're going to jump right into it, and we want to say Happy New Year to Josh DeMello from the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. Here we go with another year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
We had a pretty good year, you know, all considering the fishery. We had some great stuff to report, had a bunch of good shows. Generally what we do, gang, is we usually record this like during the week, like on a Wednesday, and it airs on the weekend. So at this show, what you're talking about is we just saw that the tiger sharks eating up that whale carcass, right?
Right.
And we're seeing all of this other stuff. And in real time, we were going to do some other things, but I came across a press release by the council that came out yesterday, my friends, and it said Modern Recreational Fisheries Management Act implications on the Western Pacific region. And every time I see that, the hair on my neck goes up, because I want to know, what are the feds talking to us? Is this good, bad, or ugly? So I immediately wanted to say, why don't we start off the year by making people not only understand this a little bit, but understand kind of how we are in the big picture of the national fisheries. And this is something that you deal with all the time. For those that don't know what this is, when they saw this thing like I did, they think, oh, more restrictions. What is this all about, this act?
So the Magnuson Act, which was created by Congress back in 1976.
Which is what we operate under.
Right, and which created the Regional Fishery Management Councils, of which the Western Pacific is just one of eight. Mm-hmm. It has been undergoing changes and amendments constantly since 1976, with big reauthorizations in 96 and 2006. Mm-hmm. And so we're around that time where it's almost ready. It was ready to reauthorize again in 2016. And
like every 10 years, it was making provisions for it.
Basically. Yeah, and so since 16, we really haven't had a bill that got passed. And then so we've been watching the Congress. They've had bills in 2017 and 2018, and all these different machinations. But what happened was towards the end of December last year, the Senate passed a bill that took parts of all these other bills and sent it to the president, or went to the House, approved by the House, went to the president for signature. And on the last day of 2018,
it got signed.
Right. President Trump signed it into law. And that was the Modernizing Recreational Fisheries Management Act, or Senate Bill 1520.
Okay, now, and we're gonna parse through what some of that means. But one of the things that I became interested in, because you know that any organization, there's strength in numbers, and politicians pay attention to the strength that are in numbers. And it appears to me that, you know, there is a, for instance, if you are a hunter and a fisherman like many of us are, you might be an NRA member. You know that they've had a lot to say in elections. They endorse people and all of that stuff. And I guess, Josh, it shows from a position of strength. If you organize, whatever concerns you have get heard. So this, in a way, most of the councils that we deal with, we're dealing with the Magnuson Act in the Pacific, we're dealing about tuna. There's a tremendous stuff, recreational fishery on the mainland, we know nothing about.
What we've been dealing with in the past few years or so with recreational fishing, or non-commercial fishing, as we like to call it, out in our area, is a lot different from what's been going on the East Coast and in the Gulf of Mexico.
A lot different, yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of things that were going on in the East Coast, and particularly Florida and the Gulf states, where they have red snapper, which is a fish that everybody fishes for, and there's a lot of management that went on with it, and quotas for everyone, and seasons, and basically it's at one point I think it was a week or 2 week season for that fish.
Good luck.
And so the recreational fishermen there have been feeling like they haven't been treated fairly, and we've seen this at the recreational fishing summit that we talked about with Andrew last year, and at all these other recreational meetings. So they thought they needed some change, and so in this bill, which was basically honchoed by those states and a coalition of recreational fishermen.
It was specific reference to that one species, because it was the one that got painted into a corner. So basically they're saying you can't catch this fish anymore.
Well, and, the, yeah. and then there's other things like you can only catch one marlin on the East Coast something. And so they've never felt that they've been treated the same as the commercial fishermen have. And so with this, they're actually asking the National Marine Fisheries Service and the United States government really to think about recreational fishing in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so just because it works for commercial doesn't mean it works for recreational. And they want the councils to consider different means of evaluating recreational fishery catch limits.
Which makes us unique in a respect, right? Because, you know, there are all these councils. These councils are not just geographic. In our case, the geography that we cover in the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is the largest. And it also is probably, I guess, Josh, where most of us are. We don't want to say that we're commercial. We don't want to say that we're professional, but we're certainly not. We're certainly cut above being strictly a recreational catch and release society, because that's not what we do. We eat our fish. We catch our fish and we eat them.
And I think it really hits home for us, because mm-hmm. we don't really want to be judged the same way as a commercial, you know, those industrial fishing in on the East Coast or in Alaska. And they're asking pretty much the same thing, is that if you're going to manage us, don't manage us on how much we catch. Manage on things like more extraction rates or fishing mortality targets, instead of just saying, oh, you can only take 1,000 pounds, because the way they fish is really different from the commercial.
But you know, then the other thing is coming up, and we do this a lot here on this program, and one of the things that Josh was talking about, where we have maybe the leg up or a leg up on some of the other councils, is particularly when the meetings are taking place and we have these fishers forums. And during those forums is quite often when we hear the guy that's either semi-commercial or recreational and says, hey, you know, who's going to take care of us? We kind of do that a little bit more, I think, than some of the other areas.
And I think we have for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the main concerns of the recreational fishing industry or groups in the Southeast and the Gulf is that they don't have the representation on the councils like we do.
Knock on wood, we do have. Right.
Yeah. So they felt alienated or pushed to the side because their interests weren't represented. But for us, we've had recreational fishermen on the council from the beginning. Our first chair was a recreational fisherman, Wads Yee, who was a senator.
State senator. Wadsworth Yee was a great guy.
And then Peter Fithian was on the original council, and he founded the Hawaii International Billfish Tournament.
Which, by the way, we're looking at number 61 coming up.
And now we have Dean Sensui, who's the producer of Hawaii Goes Fishing. We have Ed Watamura, the president of the Wailua Boat Club. So we've always had that representation from recreational fishing.
And that's the good part. And by the way, there's a lot more overlap in recreational and commercial in Hawaii than anywhere else. Only because I guess maybe the national guys look at it. If you sell a fish, you're commercial. And that's because in large parts of the country, and our fishermen don't know this. For instance, you can't be a recreational fisherman in California and go sell your fish.
Right. And really legally, by the federal definition and even the state's CML definition, if you sell one fish, you're a commercial fisherman. And we don't have, we have some commercial fishermen that's what they do. That's their job. They go out and catch fish to provide for the community.
But a lot of us just say, hey, you know what? My grass really needs mowing. Why don't you have your boy come mow my grass? I'll give you guys some fish. And technically that's a commercial transaction.
Right. It's a barter or trade system.
Heaven help us if we have to do all of that stuff. It's going to be pretty tough. But I think that the reason why I wanted to get together with this is because I know that a lot of people, they just casually will read something and say, the end is near. It doesn't seem like that was the case here. I guess what you're saying is that the people who really formulated this from back east, they just wanted to stand up or be counted. They want to be recognized.
They do. That's how I read the bill. Mm-hmm. And knowing what they've been going through and talking to them in meetings, it's really more for them. But when you go nationally and you do a congressional bill, unless it specifically says only for the Gulf of Mexico or something, it really applies to all of us.
One of the things that came up just the other day is, you know, we've had some changes at DoCare and DoBoer and some of the other things, and we're taking a look at having people called that, 643 DLNR and all of that stuff when they see things, is that maybe we are more aware of things that are going on that are not right. So aren't a lot of these things, even though they are rules, a rule is only as good as enforcement. And from what I understand is that we're going to be spending more resources doing enforcement going forward, because particularly it's so easy now to shoot a video or something of somebody doing something wrong and being able to turn it in and not having to testify.
And there's a lot of that going on. And I think that's something that not just the council, but all the enforcement agencies have to think about, because there's things that are going on, people taking pictures or snapping videos with their cell phones. It's how can they legally use it? You know, I mean, is it enforceable? The rule that they have, is it enforceable? Based on these eyewitness accounts.
I'll give you an example. This happened on my regular show, and it was around New Year's. And it was a neighbor shooting a cell phone video of their neighbor sending aerial rockets up, right? And they said, here's the evidence, but this guy is a bully. He's going to retaliate. So now apparently there's a move underfoot to be able to facilitate that, so somebody can turn in something anonymously because they are afraid of retaliation. That's just the tip of the iceberg, though, because isn't the same thing true? Just the other day, there were some repeat offenders. I know you know this story. There's some repeat offenders on Lanets. And when that happens, and somebody that is abiding by the law says, hey, this guy's been coming over here forever. Nothing happens to him, and he's got 20 nets. Me, I just have one, but I'm just going to go. Nobody's going to care. I'm going to go catch my fish.
Yeah, and part of it is the answer might be community management, community policing. Yeah. And there's only a limited amount of dough care officers that we do have, and they're trying to get more, and they have the dough care academy and everything, but at some point, they can only be in one place at one time.
And by the way, they cover a tremendous piece of real estate, these guys and gals. But one of the other things that I became concerned about, when I saw the press release about this Management Act, the minute I saw those words, Fisheries Management Act, I got afraid of something. Okay, what bogus science is, who's pushing the envelope here, and how is it going to affect me? Do you see anything affecting Hawaii out of this other than maybe selling marlin to the mainland?
So a lot of this act really has direction for the Secretary of Commerce to conduct studies on how limited access privilege programs are being used by the different councils, a study on how the Marine Recreational Information Program can better implement some of the recommendations from the National Academy of Science, like looking at electronic reporting, so smartphone apps and other surveys that could be used. Yeah. And there's also this one about state partnerships and helping out the states to facilitate recreational data collection. So there's some stuff in there maybe we can take advantage of and help out the state of Hawaii or our other island areas to get some funding for potential data collection.
Do you think that's the key? I mean, do you think that our willingness to participate in catch reports as those that are commercial or semi-commercial is that people that understand if there are surveys done or science is needed in the recreational area, that they're likely to be able to, cough up that without the fear of having their fishery damaged by a negative report?
I think we need to find a way to do it that people are comfortable with. I mean, we can always go in and say, hey, you gotta turn in a logbook, and you got to get a federal permit, and the council can do that if it wanted to, but really we'd rather have it in a way that it's useful, that people are going to actually do it. Some folks are working on smartphone applications, so you can pull it up on your phone when you're fishing, and you say, "Hey, I caught this at this time," and even drop a point
on
the map.
That's really cool. Yeah, I love that.
And so we'll probably have a guy that's working on it come talk to you about it sometime this first quarter.
Yeah, and that there's another thing that's piggyback to that. Just so that people understand, Josh, for those of you that don't know, your official capacity at the council is what?
I'm a fishery analyst, but really I'm the lead on coral reef ecosystems, the coordinator for our coral reef ecosystem program, as well as for our different island areas and recreational fishing and aquaculture. I have a bunch of
Yeah, and that's why I ask, because I mean, everybody, by the way, everybody at the council wears lots of hats, you know, so everybody has a hat rack in there, not to show off their collection, but which hat you guys got to put on each day matters. But what I'm still guessing at is that the science in gathering these data and stuff on catch reports and all of that is so much more sophisticated than it was. Won't that be of help to be able to incorporate some of the stuff done in Hawaii to maybe some of the other areas that can learn from how to take an assessment, how to even know what's there?
Our bottom fish fishery is probably the example of,
yeah,
of, how, to,
one, yeah.
of how to do it. Yeah. And from a really horrible start and saying it was overfished or overfishing was occurring to actually getting the fishermen involved and in both the science to collect the data and for refining the catch reports. It really is the example for our region on how we should be doing stock assessment.
And by the way, gang, the very first one that came out, the actual quota got expanded. And most of us fishermen were shocked. We're thinking, they're going to use this every which way they can to limit us. Instead, they said, you know what? We were a little bit too restrictive. You can actually do this. But then a lot of us felt, and I know, I don't know, I'm sure you're one of them, and I know I am, that I am much more at peace with the gathering of the stock information than I used to be. It used to be, I don't know how they got their point in times. I don't know how they did their counts. It was like somebody would just say, oh, there's no more Manini over there.
So, yeah, and I think that helped for the fishermen to understand. Yeah, yeah. But we still don't know exactly what the recreational fishing are. Recreational fishermen are catching, so that's still an assumption we make that it's one to one in the model, and really, because you have to have a BF on the boat, and we know how many people are on that registry, and we know how many people have commercial marine license, so we know the universe. So it's just a matter of trying to figure out, okay, how much do you actually catch? Are you catching as much as the commercial guys? Are you catching less? Are you catching more?
Yeah, but by the way, some guys don't know. And, you know, ignorance is not an excuse. If you're pulling down the highway and you're going 80 and the cop pulls you over and says, you know, what's this, you know, do you know how fast you're going? No, I didn't see the sign. It doesn't matter, because what they're looking at is if you have the ability to go out and catch a fish, a bottom fish, and if you're going to use one piece of that for something other than taking home and eating, you have to be a BF. You have to be a bottom fisherman. You have to be registered.
Well, I think bottom fish is a more selective type of fishing.
It is.
And so to go out there, you have to have a boat. Mm-hmm. And then you have to, if you're probably using like an Electromate or something, or maybe hand lining, it's not like the guy who can go to Walmart, grab a pole and go down to the beach.
Right.
Right.
A whip.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, as part of your responsibility and you're spending all this money, wouldn't you want to make sure that the fishery is there so that you can keep using what you paid for?
But I'm still thinking there's another thing, and maybe this was the big reason why I thought it'd be a good idea to get together with Josh, everybody on this, get the first of the year going, is because I think culturally and historically we have a lot more closeness to the fishing area than others. I mean, for instance, let's go to a council back east. Half the year, they can't fish. I mean, they got bad weather, they got snow, they got ice, whatever. We are year-round, so we don't relate to that. And yet, I'm not sure that there would be the understanding here is, have you experienced the same amount of cultural involvement or even religious involvement, for that matter, in other places besides here? Because we know what it's like here.
Well, in places like the Pacific Northwest, there's a big cultural component of their fisheries and they set aside quotas.
Oh, yeah,
for the tribes.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
In other places, it's their culture as well to go fishing. I mean, we say that it's our culture, and they say, yeah, us too.
Yeah.
But ours goes a little deeper, I think, with actually having to depend on the resources. Theirs is more of the culture of fishing and going out and being able to recreate in that manner.
But I got to laugh because I see some things like the Alaska stories and some of the other stuff. They're not out there for fun. They're out there to feed their families. It's pretty critical. But still yet, I want people when they see this, and one of the reasons why we wanted to do this show today is this press release is just out. And you're going to see different variations of it. And the title that got me going was Modern Recreational Fisheries Management Act, Implications in the Western Pacific Region. Okay, let's talk about those. Let's talk about what some of those implications are.
So I think one of the things to keep in mind is that because it says Recreational Fisheries Management Act, it's mainly geared towards that, but we don't want to exclude or separate out recreational and commercial fishing because it's all fishing. No matter what you do, you're putting a hook in the water or you're diving in the water. So it's all extracting fishing. It's the social and economic aspects of it that divide it. But really, the implications of this bill is that there's going to be studies that are conducted by the Secretary of Commerce and National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA Fisheries, and it's going to come out and it's going to have recommendations on what to do next.
Sure. With regards to seasons, size limits, bag limits, all these things.
Well, and how do we use those with commercial fisheries versus how do we use those with recreational fisheries?
Exactly.
And whether we're using the appropriate tool for the appropriate fishery. And so one of the things in the act is that it looks at mixed-use fisheries, which means it has a commercial component or a recreational component and or a charter component. So if
certain of our harbors you go to, you see all three of those every day working side by side.
Besides the longline fishery, everything is either commercial, recreational, or charter.
Yeah.
I mean, we catch everything with any way we can, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, there's another side to this, gang, and that is the differentiation where the state picks up and where the council leaves off. It's a gray area, but it's basically a specific band. But I think there's an awful lot of more overlap in Hawaii than there might be in some areas, right?
Especially for our pelagic species.
Exactly.
Because they can't come close to shore.
Yeah.
Off of South Point, guys are catching
mai-mai, they're catching ahi, they're catching fish.
Marlin.
Why do you do that?
Right.
Marlin, everything, yeah.
Right. While it's not as common.
By the way,
it's not that common, but
I had a friend, we were up on the Big Island, another friend was with me, and he says, we're going trash bagging tomorrow. And my friend said, what do you mean trash bagging? They thought they were going to go, pick up rubbish. No. What they're going to do is trash bagging. You take this big rubbish bag and you fill it with air and you tie a rope around it. And then you tie your fish hook to it. And then you let the wind, which is at South Point, take your line like way out. And it's like an outrigger. I mean, it's like a long line. You're going out a half a mile sometimes.
Well, traditionally, some of the island cultures had the same thing, but with kites.
Yeah,
and they would kites out of Lahala or something.
To get that bait out there. But it's not because of anything else but a need. Some people actually need to do this to bond with their families, which we've talked about many times. But some people actually say, you know what, I got to go out when there's ulua, I got to go catch me. I got to go freeze fish. I got to eat.
And I think this is what... for me, anyway, the main implication of seeing a bill or an act like this come through is that you're really starting to look at whether recreational fishing or non-commercial fishing trumps that of what the commercial fishing is. Commercial fishing provides jobs and money to the economy and food to the markets, that kind of stuff. But recreational has just as much value in providing not just like you said the recreation with the family and the culture and tradition, but also food and money to the economy.
Speaking about money to the economy, I mean, even though there have been, we've seen a proliferation across the country in the last couple of years of big box stores going under. Sports Authority, for instance, is gone. That was where a lot of us used to go and get our gear. POP has gotten huge in it. There, every single department store in Hawaii, practically, in drugstores, everybody's got a little fishing stuff because, I need some hooks. And I'm picking up mama's prescription, but I'm also getting some hooks, I'm going fishing.
Right, right. So for me, it's really bringing recreational fishing to the forefront of fisheries management. For us, it always has been, but nationally, it's starting to get more attention. So you're going to start seeing this recreational and commercial kind of either side by side or one going ahead of the other. And we've already seen that with the Billfish Act, which was pretty much proposed by the same people.
Same gang. That's really what got me going because I got nervous thinking that hopefully calmer heads are going to prevail and our ability to sell certain fish in certain places is going to either be restored or not be further, you know, further impacted. Interestingly enough, let's incorporate another thing. Everybody knows in the odd years, Waikiki is closed for fishing. This is an odd year. And it's, I know that we've talked about this before. Some fishermen may not agree, but science does suggest that by leaving that area untouched for a year, it rebounds. It's amazing how it rebounds.
But it really depends on the fish. Some fish don't just stay in that boundary. Some fish do, but some fish don't.
Well, the real key was, while we say that, it also is that it's like vultures waiting around a carcass for that for the end of the year to come. And the first couple of days of the new year, whatever gains you made in the previous year, in some cases, get eliminated.
And it's people that will go around the edges because, you know, hopefully if there's some kind of spillover, you know, people pick up the extras that come out. But
fish don't know, by the way, that they're in this grid or that grid. They're just swimming.
Right. And really, it's really about managing it properly instead of just closing it, because you can have it open and maybe there's certain species that need help. Maybe there's not. And using the right tool for the job.
Yeah, and there were some suggestions before that it should be 2 years closed, 1 year open, and all that kind of stuff. And I guess that's being massaged around. But isn't this particular geography, everybody's looking at that to make sure, okay, what model works best? In other words, if we're going to employ these caveats or these restrictions in other places, which really work? What can we make the fisherman comfortable with so that he'll be or she'll be patient to not fish there for a year or two? Well,
and that's why we have to look around at what other places are doing. Yeah. And it doesn't always fit what's going on here because of the species, the water temperature, that kind of stuff. But, you know, you see the state doing different things like the herbivore replenishment area in Kaikili on Maui.
Yeah.
And then you have the aquarium zones in Kona and the 10-year rest period in Ko'upulehu.
Yeah.
So there's different things going on, but...
What about some concerns? Let's make sure, because we're going to have a time constraint in a couple minutes, and the reason why we like Josh doing this in the fisheries analysis stuff that he does is we often have talked about this in the past, and that is, even though this particular press release and talking about this management act doesn't have the implications that other things do, is there's a lot of people that are still concerned about community-based management and where that might be going in the next year. We're looking at a couple of areas, right, where it is being employed, and we're looking to see, make sure that there's fairness and equal opportunity. But more and more people are saying, hey, maybe we do need to keep some areas just for the people who live in that area, in that geography. Isn't that sort of alarm to people?
Yeah, I think it should more be the people who use that area, not necessarily those that live there, but the people that use that area should have more of a say in what goes on, because they're using it more often.
Sure.
And there's other people who don't like people telling them what to do, basically, in anything, really. Mm. But then you have those that say, hey, why these special rules for these places? It's open. It's free to everybody. Yeah.
It's like our access to the ocean is supposed to be, right, in some respects.
Right, but in some respects, it's also, we don't want to make blanket rules that affect everybody, and maybe it doesn't apply to that one certain area.
Yeah, and you know, the hope is, and calmer heads have prevailed in many of these. I mean, there are certain hot spots, and we know that. They're not going to go away. Some of that's political rather than anything else. I think that in the final analysis, most of us want to do the right thing. In other words, it may be that you might have to say in some area like Waikiki this year, okay, it's got to be closed for 3 years and then open for one. Somewhere the science has got to do with it. But I wanted to make sure that we did get onto this today, because I know a lot of people are going to be picking up stories or parts of the things that are done and get the wrong impression of this. What presence at WPCouncil.org is there on this act? Can they go look at the whole thing and sort of learn more stuff?
Yes, you could. We will probably be putting that enrolled version on the council's website and tag it through this show.
Yeah,
and that way it can be there as a resource.
Yeah, we will have this actually show all of our shows up on the web along with some of the things that we're doing this year, only because you need to have all of this information. And one of the things that I've learned, and I hear so much good feedback from you all, and by the way, it is very important that you give us feedback. You can go to wpcouncil.org and email for contact, or you can send me an email, and I will get that registered so that we know sort of what stuff you're looking for. It's going to be a good year, and I think mainly because, you know, things seem to be going at least all right in the economy, and everything seems to be going okay, and, you know, some of the ugly politics is at least for a little while behind us, so we can get down to stuff that is fun and that can have some impact. So that would be a good thing to go to wpcouncil.org and learn some more. Before we go, what are you doing right now? What's coming up that we can give people a little sneak preview on for coming up in 19?
So one of our projects is a Hawaii biosampling project, and we're looking at working with a contractor, the Poseidon Fisheries Research, to really look at what the growth rates are of our coral reef species, and looking at how big they grow, how long it takes for them to grow, looking at their age, their length, that kind of stuff. And we've already worked with some of the fishing tournaments, but we hope to expand that in 2019.
So we hope up, you guys. You got to participate.
And for those in Maui, we'd like to expand it to Maui sometime this year as well. And so that should help us at least provide some of that base information into future stock assessments.
Okay, and here is another thing. I'm going to blow my own horn for a minute. Please go to Hawaii Boats and Yachts this month. Not only did we go through the new Hawaiian lunar calendars, Josh, you guys at the council must be really stoked. There was a great collaborative project that people can now get online and get. This cooperation between the YWCA Fernhurst Gales and the council, and this beautiful piece that's come up about women and fishing and tides and moons and all of that stuff.
Hina, the goddess of the moon.
Unbelievable, huh? Let's have one of those Mahina days. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. We'll see you again next time. In the meantime, if there's something that you want to hear on the program, especially in this council segment, drop me an email, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. themikebuckshow@gmail.com. And if you want to know more about this, the modern Recreational Fishery Management Act, keep an eye on wpcouncil.org. Have a great week. Go catch some fish. Enjoy yourself. It's 2019. More fish. Aloha.